Hi, Charisse here with a special announcement. You can now enjoy select episodes of Detailed in video form. That's right. Detailed is now available on RCAT's YouTube channel. Now, you may be thinking, I already listened to the podcast. No need to watch it on YouTube. Well, trust me, if you don't want to miss out, even if you're an avid listener of the podcast, the video format is a completely different experience. Not only is it like hanging out with us, but you also get to hear parts of the conversation that were left on the cutting room floor. You can also see the photos, drawings, and video as we discuss the incredible projects that are featured. Come join us on YouTube. Follow the link in our show notes, and let's get into the details. This is an original podcast by RCAT. Try the number one most used website for finding building product information and save time and money. No registration is required with RCAT, so try it today and get ahead on your next project. Visit RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com.
There was a lot of money obviously going into this, and we wanted to make sure it showed that, you know, the stuff that the customers were seeing right when you walk in was compelling and beautiful and represented our region with all of the timber. And these kind of details became really important where they would maybe have been kind of a really small piece of a new construction project.
Well, and when we started construction, the interior design was not completed by any means. So we didn't exactly know how that fireplace was going to finish out. And there were a lot of unknowns. There were so many unknowns. But I think having the collaborative spirit helped us create this kind of magical building that looked like a pile of garbage when we started.
This is Detailed, an original podcast by RCAT. I am your host, Charisse Lakeside, Senior Specification Writer at RDH Building Science and fondly known as the CSI Kraken. We will speak with professionals who share their insights into the most complex, interesting, and odd building conditions and the ingenuity it took to make it work. Join me as I pull back the curtain on the building industry and uncover the lessons learned. You'll gain valuable knowledge to help you better navigate your next project. My guests today are Dave Hardister, Principal, and Andra Riegler, Project Manager / Architect from Woodblock Architecture in Portland, Oregon. Dave has 36 years of experience in the AEC industry, with 30 of those years as a licensed architect. He is a 1987 graduate of NC State School of Design and is one of the four founders of Woodblock Architecture, which was established in 2015. Prior to Woodblock, Dave was a part owner of a design build company for 11 years as the principal in charge of the architecture component of the business. Dave has a diverse background in project typologies, including multifamily, hospitality, adaptive reuse, and fire station design. Dave's primary role is in project delivery and working directly with staff. Andra is a newer resident of the Pacific Northwest, moving to Portland in 2018 from Atlanta, Georgia, where she worked at a large-scale multifamily-focused firm in Buckhead. Andra brings many years of experience in multifamily architecture. Since starting with Woodblock, her portfolio of work has gained diversity in project types like retail, adaptive reuse, medical offices, and hospitality. The project we will be talking about today is the INE Construction Headquarters in Wilsonville, Oregon. But before we get started, don't forget to take a look at the project photos and drawings as you listen along. You can click on the link in our show notes or visit www.rcat.com/podcast. Today's featured project was for INE Construction, a rapidly growing general contractor in the Pacific Northwest. The company tapped Woodblock Architecture to design their new headquarters. But as Dave notes, its start was quite jarring.
There's quite a backstory to this project. It started as a 30,000 square foot ground up office for this rapidly growing contractor slash developer. He had a site that he was looking at the Aurora Airport, and it was going to require a rezone. So we got all the way through schematic design on that, and he was under an extreme time crunch. He was selling his office that he was currently in, and he had to be out by April of 2020. So we were working on this in March of 2019, just about ready to roll into design development, well, CDs really. And I came into our Monday morning design meeting at his office, and he said, "We're changing gears." "What?" "I bought a building over the weekend in Wilsonville. It's right on I-5. That's our new project. We're going to convert it into the offices." So I was dumbfounded. And the schedule wasn't changing. This was in probably early April of 2019. And I thought he was joking. He was not joking. And we had to hit the ground running. So that kind of forced our hand to, this was the only method to get this done was design build.
After a design phase pivot that would keep anyone up at night, it was time to shift focus to the new site and building. What was once a nondescript nursing school from the 70s would undergo a significant makeover, showcasing modern design and functionality. The project began with a plan to repurpose the existing V-shaped structure with two wings surrounding a neglected courtyard.
This building was an interesting gem. It was currently functioning as a nursing school, but prior to that, when it was originally built, it was a printing office or company. So there was a lot of storage and equipment. And so a variety of different floor assemblies and room types and grade changes and just kind of some oddities that the nursing school had kind of put band-aids on to get to function for their needs. And so a lot of the circulation was enclosed. There was clearly a need for separation of spaces just for health and safety and that kind of thing. So we noticed that opening those spaces up was going to be pretty critical. And then the building itself is kind of a bow tie shape, if you've ever looked at it in an aerial view. So the second floor had this really harsh angle kind of running from one stair all the way back to the other one. So we knew there was some square footage that we could probably get from modifying that. But then the more walls, especially exterior walls that we were touching, the more complicated the structure was going to get. So there was a lot of uncovering things and finding out that we had to make quick kind of decisions or changes under construction. So I think that's where this method of having the owner and contractor be the same unit really was helpful, because instead of having to explain all this to the owner, they're kind of knowing what's going on in the moment and they're invested and they're making the decisions with you. And they also have the construction knowledge to help in those decisions. So we had a really good structural team with us to work on this, so that they were constantly kind of having to pivot and adjust to the owners mostly and our design ideas and removing load-bearing conditions. And they were just having to kind of deal with it.
Dancing around existing interior shear walls. And essentially, we took the program from the 30,000 square foot ground up project and forced it into this odd shaped building. I think we landed at 26,000 square feet when we were done. So they lost some storage space, really, but the program was able to fit into this odd geometry that it was challenging for sure.
Woodblock recognized the potential in the space and decided to overhaul the building's layout. The courtyard, once overlooked, became the focal point of the renovation, now designed to welcome visitors with an atrium and more inviting atmosphere.
It did require a complete gutting. We left the elevator and the two ground floor restrooms. That was it. The owner wanted to keep the vision of the ground up building that had two wings and then this two-story volume atrium lobby space. And he wanted to replicate that in this new building, this new old building. So the first time I walked it, I was like, man, I don't know what to do here. There was this courtyard, the entry courtyard, that was just sad, dark. Plants were all not maintained. It didn't lend anything to the building at all. It looked like lost square footage to me.
There were also some kind of maybe cross bracing or details on the second floor that really blocked a lot of light from coming in through the courtyard anyway. So the kind of reception area was still really dark, even though you had this courtyard, and the wall to the main stair was solid with no windows. So there wasn't really any use of that interior to kind of open things up. It seemed to almost be making those conditions worse. So luckily it feels like our client was able to kind of visualize that the atrium model would work there. And then we had to kind of work through how to actually get it to work.
The site posed several hurdles due to its uneven terrain, proximity to the I-5 highway, and trees that added some challenges.
We tried to leave a lot of the parking, but they definitely wanted as much parking or storage for, you know, construction equipment as possible. And that was maybe the little bit of program that didn't quite fit in this particular building. And so they have to kind of have a storage building separate, which the original goal was to have everything. But the site reads like it's really flat. And then when we got there and walked around to the back on the I-5 side, one of the stairs from the two stair towers didn't come all the way down to the ground. There was like a 3-foot just jump at the end, which these were going to be our egress stairs. So it was important for them to get to the ground and figure out how some of that hardscape was going to work. And there were some pretty large mature trees back there that were causing a little bit of chaos in the foundation. So it's really tight onto the highway. So we really had kind of a limited space to really move in there to get anything to work. And we were trying to keep the footprint outside of the courtyard to atrium change as much in the existing perimeter as possible. So that one stair ended up kind of coming out through the exterior as well, just because there wasn't any space to lose in the footprint to add more stairs. So it really had to kind of come out of the site.
Well, and as I recall, at the east side of the building where the entry is, we were very tight making the accessibility work with the existing sidewalk and then the existing parking. There was some gymnastics that had to happen.
Did you have to do anything with the trees that were causing problems?
The client did have an arborist come and deem some of them not healthy, but it is very hard to have that process go your way, especially in Wilsonville. They're pretty adamant that mature trees are left alone. So that was kind of an added layer to our land use process, which was already, as Dave was saying, a very tight schedule. So adding anything like that that kind of involves a lot of approvals was necessary, but challenging.
Well, we did have to put back the same amount of trees that we took away. So there was that sort of compromise that the city was willing to make.
Challenges arose early on after scheduling constraints led to design commission review without a fully vetted exterior design.
Being design build, we hadn't designed everything at all. And they were interested in the exterior. So we presented this exterior that ended up not really looking quite the way as we submitted it, primarily the colors. And the owner decided that he was going to paint this entire building black, all black, everything. Well, he did this during construction, and somebody from the city drove by, and they were like, no, no way. An anonymous tip. It was so imposing. They referred to it as Darth Vader, and so we had to go back in front of the design commission to try to sell this to them. I think I went in front of them twice, and it was not easy. We got it through, but we had to compromise and add some wood siding to the exterior of the building at the corners and some wood trellises at the entry side. And the owner was adamant. He was not going to back down. It's his brand, black, white, that's it. I think by painting it black, it really highlights the fenestration, especially on that entry side, the unique sort of mosaic of the changing window sizes. It It really makes that stand out. And then it's really stunning at night when it's lit up.
I mean, material-wise, like Dave was saying, the branding was really important to this particular client. So they're also primarily envelope modification, remodel type contractors too. So they're pretty invested in how the envelope was going to work and how it was going to look and what maybe this process would be when we were going to paint everything the same color to kind of understand the different textural changes of the different materials. So some city requirements were at work, of course, on, you know, not, they don't want a fully fiber cement building, which most jurisdictions don't anymore. So there was going to be metal panel and some type of wood tone, possibly, you know, actual timber, but possibly some kind of timber-like product. We know where we live, so we know it's hard to maintain some certain materials. And with this client going to be the operator, they definitely, as much as they have experience to do it, they wanted to make sure the product was going to end up good and successful and sturdy and have a long lifespan. So knowing that we had a little bit of exterior that we were trying to keep, we had these really large window openings almost everywhere, these kind of picture windows, very consistent, definitely reads like it was classrooms or something like that. So they wanted to keep a lot of that just so they weren't modifying too much of the exterior structure itself, but they replaced a lot of the windows to help with sound and kind of passive solar to make sure that the spaces aren't just getting completely destroyed by temperatures and thermal transitions and that kind of thing. So we spent a lot of time on the back on the I-5 side just to ensure that those spaces were still going to be usable and it wasn't going to be miserable to be 20 feet off of the freeway. And so knowing that we were kind of pulling this courtyard into this atrium space, there was going to be a lot on the interior that was really detailed that we wanted to have almost like a backdrop to that or some kind of canvas from the inside that would really kind of hold that height, that grandness that the client really wanted and give us a space to do something interesting. So that's where the storefront tile kind of idea took life and took shape. We designed it with a ton of different iterations and a bunch of different size windows. And I remember the client basically saying, you can pick three and we'll just try to repeat that, but we don't need to go too crazy. But I think the design and the idea is still very much there. And we wanted to really have kind of a sturdy material on the exterior so that we could have these kind of lights and shadows. So they have a lot of sconce lighting that goes up and down. So there's highlighting of all kinds of, you know, intricacies of the building, all the shadow lines, all the metal panel connections. So I found that some materials that you would maybe think are obvious or simple or straightforward, having this contractor be so invested in this project, they really wanted to show off. So a lot of the intersections and the little kind of smaller details are really well done. So that really adds kind of another layer to the exterior.
At the roof, an unexpected redesign of the structure allowed for the addition of a beautifully crafted outdoor terrace.
That was the area where the roof was much larger. So we were capturing a lot of that space back and then occupying it. So obviously that proves to be challenging in terms of a larger assembly space. How do you get people out of it? How many exits are you going to need? How are we going to get the structure to be able to support people and not just maintenance and equipment? So that one really was probably the hardest to resolve. I think the roof had been replaced maybe over the lifetime of the building. And so the access point was not flush with the roof anymore. And so we were hoping that once we removed a lot of what was there, the membrane layer, the insulation, we would be able to either build it back up differently or kind of sister onto the existing structure and get it to work. But it ended up that the math just was not mathing. So we had to completely redo the structure there.
I was looking at some earlier design drawings and some sketches, and we actually had some interior ramps that were going to ramp up to that patio.
And then again, it was we already were under on the square footage they wanted for their program, so there was really nowhere to lose efficiency.
So we dropped the structure. We were able to reuse some of the existing joists, but we ended up going to 12 inches on center, I believe, to deal with the heavier loads and the paver system. And those are the kind of things that we had to deal with through the process on the fly, you know, a lot of gear shifting.
Yeah, you don't know what you're going to uncover until you kind of do that. So there was some selective demo when we were surveying, but mostly a lot of this was when the building was down to the bones. So we had to just kind of work with what we had. And of course, that reduced the head height and the spaces below, which were supposed to be more the field team's area, where they wanted some roll-up doors, some taller things, be able to use that for storage. So there were times where a certain program had to kind of move around because the space was no longer what we expected.
Inside, structural elements were exposed, namely the nail laminated timber, or NLT, a manufactured structural element made of stacked dimensional lumber fastened together with nails or sometimes screws. The simplicity of NLT makes it relatively easy to assemble, allowing it to be done on-site or as prefabricated panels in a factory setting. It's popular for the construction of floor and ceilings, but can also be used as wood walls, stairs, elevator shafts, or even bent and assembled to create curved structures.
Nail laminated timber, you see it in old warehouses. It's 150-year-old technology. And here we use 2x4s, and you stand them on end and nail them together in a staggered nailing pattern. And you create with the panels that we use, I believe they were 4x16. Super easy to lay down as a structure. There was one guy operating the crane and two guys on the roof setting the panels, and it went really fast. The structure holding up those panels, I believe they were 5 3/4 by 22 inch glue lambs that were 8 feet on center. So it's a really beautiful structure, I think. He wanted a grand entry. That was kind of his driving design decision. He wanted people to walk into his building and just say, wow, this is amazing, and use it as a showcase for their construction work and also their ability to, they have great vision, great design vision. And that's pretty rare when you work with a client where you almost don't have to do much. You just sort of follow their lead. When we were working on the first building, I wanted to use CLT for this grand entry volume as the structure ceiling. And that got shut down because of cost. And we brought DCI in to do the engineering, and we were at a meeting. He said, why don't we just use NLT? It's so much easier. And it looks good. It goes up quickly. It's pretty easy to fabricate. So the owner was all in. In fact, he set up his own fabrication shop to build the panels. Having never done it, he took it on himself and just went for it. That wood material drove the interior design. The interior designer just followed suit. We have these wood slat ceiling clouds in the open offices. They're the wall behind the reception desks. It's the wood slats vertically. They carved their logo into those wood slats. It made it easy. This one material, and then we just ran with it.
That's a unique way to solve that need of, you know, wanting CLT. You know, if it's too expensive, how can we get, you know, something similar?
Yeah, CLT has it's a much cleaner look. NLT is a little bit rough, but when it's 30 feet up, you're not going to see those imperfections. It's a beautiful system.
I mean, I had just moved out here from Atlanta, and there's not a lot of mass timber, or there wasn't at the time there. So it was a pretty interesting jump into what this region has to offer and how this building type was gaining so much traction. It's really interesting to expose a lot of the structure like that. I mean, you're so used to if it's wood, it's covered, it's wrapped, you don't see it. So this is really, it was a really beautiful result.
We actually got quite a bit of attention for it. I think the DJC interviewed me about the NLT. I don't think anyone was using it very much when we started the project. I knew about DAL, the DLT and CLT, but I had never seen the NLT before.
The program features a spacious employee lounge offering a relaxing atmosphere equipped with a kitchen. Additionally, there's an extensive fitness center, the sleek monostringer staircase, and a sizable perforated panel showcasing Ioni's logo, strategically filtering light to create a balanced ambiance in the lobby.
Everything under that new roof runs east to west. We popped up and then continued the NLT to the west. And those are common spaces on both floors. Behind the lobby reception area is their fitness center. It's nicer than I think any gym I've ever been in. But on the second floor, there is the main conference room. So the NLT runs through that as the ceiling. And then there's this rather large break room, lounge, kitchen area where the NLT runs through as well. And that drove those common spaces, the NLT. A lot of it was just trying to get a lot of daylight into these spaces that didn't have it before. And on the west side, where the gym and the lounge are, it's west facing. So we really wanted to try to filter the light. So we did that perf panel logo that's 30 feet tall by 40 feet wide, and the perforations create the logo. Well, the light and shadow play on the interior it's amazing. It's just beautiful. And I don't know that we even have any photos on our website, but I was going through photos recently and I was like, that is so cool that it did what we wanted it to do. You know, it provided some shade, and then the play of light and shadow kind of became the theme of those common spaces, the lobby and the gym and the lounge.
I think when we first saw the building itself and we saw the courtyard, obviously that was just going to be the atrium. But since this building's first floor and second floor footprints are so different, there was a lot of misalignment happening, and there wasn't any real benefit to just staying within that square footage, and it was fairly small. So once we started kind of chipping away further into the building, I think that's where the client got more excited, because all of a sudden all these walls were coming down and that area was getting a lot larger, and there was more opportunity for, you know, different fenestration or different finish materials. And kind of brings us to the main stair, where that original stair was constructed utilizing the exterior wall on the one side of the courtyard for its structural support. And once that wall came down, then that stair, which was supposed to stay exactly how it was with the rubber treads and everything, had to completely change. So that's where Dave got, you know, his really great idea to do the mono stringer.
The mono stringer. I don't know if that was my idea. That I did work on the detailing a lot. I worked on the detailing during construction because I looked at our permit set this morning. Boy, was it thin. It was pretty thin. And that stair, it just looks like a generic stair. Steel pan with concrete. There was no way Carl was going to have some generic stair there.
The open offices and conference rooms are interspersed with transition spaces incorporating coffee bars and staging areas and offering convenient amenities throughout the workspace.
There's a training room on the first floor, right when you kind of behind where you walk in the lobby. So that has not tiered seating, but rows of tables, I think, mostly for their training, where that's their field team wing. And most of the open office areas have at least some sort of coffee bar or access to one of the break rooms or a couple of smaller conference rooms, and then a lot of perimeter offices and kind of a pit sort of in the middle of cubicles. And what was interesting with this floor plan was that there's a lot of kind of transition spaces where these little coffee bars kind of ended up coming in, and the locker rooms on the gym, and a couple other kind of staging areas for some of the larger conference rooms, the kind of thing that maybe wouldn't be a priority if you were starting from scratch. But in this scenario, when you get to kind of see a floor plan and try to manipulate it, some of those things became really obvious to add, you know, some back of house opportunities. So they could really have this front of house where the big conference room is and the reception area is, and then have a lot of their usable space kind of hidden behind. So I think that was pretty successful.
Yeah, I think those little coffee bars that are tucked in next to conference rooms, they work really well. So you don't have to walk to go get a client water or a coffee. They're right there. And I think a lot of that grew out of being kind of pinned in by sheer walls. We had to create different spaces that we may not have if we would have had a blank slate.
The strong black and white branding influenced material selections, creating a striking contrast with elements such as glass and skylights.
So this client's brand, as we talked about, is black and white. A lot of his other projects are in the development space are that same color scheme. So we kind of knew that bright, vibrant colors were not going to be desirable. And so I think we kind of started to think about how black and white are, you know, kind of a solid and a void, like a positive, negative contrast. So I think that's where we wanted kind of the heaviness of exposing a lot of the structure, but then have a lot of glass railing, a lot of glass storefront, just a lot of transparency between the spaces and light coming through, so that there would just always be some kind of shadow or a contrast or something that was happening to really showcase that that is their brand. So a lot of walls without any type of glazing or particular finished material are all just painted white. That's kind of exactly what they want, is a clean looking space. And compared to what it was before, it is a shocking difference in the remodel.
We punched a bunch of skylights into the new NLT. And I remember that being a kind of a difficult move, just because of the way the panels lay out and the way the structure lays out. We really had to be careful about where they landed.
I think our structural engineer gave us like zones. It was like, this is it. We're like, okay, so that's exactly where the skylights are.
Yeah. And I think in the initial designs, we had varying sizes, really narrow and long, and they all ended up being 2 feet by 4 feet, I think is what happened. But we created this random pattern that I think is pretty cool.
With such close proximity to a major highway like I-5, I was curious what acoustic treatment may have been implemented.
I think they're triple pane, so they are pretty good. But this particular client wanted a lot of sleek materials, so those are obviously not great in terms of acoustic transfer. So I believe there are some treatments outside of the drywall, more decorative, that are helping mitigate some of that. And there's carpet in the main office areas. And then we had kind of a lighting cloud type drop ceiling over some of the offices. So I think having kind of the perimeter of PM offices, I guess, and then the interior ones are probably buffered from that sound even more. I don't know if the PMs are hating it, or maybe they have white noise machines.
I've been in the building, you know, right along that wall, and it's surprisingly not that loud. You can hear the cars going. But it's not distracting at all.
The gym might be rough because it's just a concrete slab. So I think that area is a little bit harder just because it has a taller ceiling as well. So the echo maybe, but like Dave said, when we're there, we never really notice it. And not even just because we're mentally ignoring it. It actually is pretty nice.
They did put some acoustical wall panels in the kitchen break room lounge area to probably mitigate some of that. But that's a big space as well. And the flooring is tile, so it's got some hard surfaces.
From reconfiguring the roof structure to overhauling the entire building layout, and from integrating the monostringer stair to ensuring compliance with all regulatory codes, Dave and Andra had a multitude of design challenges to solve.
Mostly just in terms of the insulation. I think since this was an existing building, but it was a new roof, we were still going to have to bring it up to code. So in order to get the pedestal to work, the structure, and the tapered insulation, that's where kind of the accuracy really was important in using our BIM software, just to make sure that we actually were accommodating for those things so that the transitions would work, accessibility. I mean, there's a lot of things at work on a rooftop terrace. So that took a lot of detail.
For me, it was that stair because it was completely on the fly and we didn't know what it was going to look like. And we really kind of struggled to make the connections look clean. So I just remember trying to get these plates to not look stupid, holding the stair treads and connecting to the monostringer. We went back and forth with Adam at DCI, how to make it work. And I think everybody was pretty satisfied.
I was not as involved in that stair detail in particular, but there were several other things that were similar to that where it was kind of this constant juggling of this existing condition that didn't meet code, trying to get it to work and still look cool, and then try to get it structurally to be stable. So we cared a lot about how it was going to look. And so you don't just want like a handrail extension jutting out into a random way where you don't have the space to work around it. So there was a lot of those considerations where corridors were tight and spaces had low ceilings, and it was just hard to get as much of the existing systems and existing structure to work. And then also to keep in mind kind of the climate here and try to make the building function well, because we know who is going to be the end user. So we're probably going to get phone calls all the time if it's horrible in there. And so there was a lot of money obviously going into this, and we wanted to make sure it showed that, you know, the stuff that the customers were seeing right when you walk in was compelling and beautiful and represented our region with all of the timber. And these kind of details became really important where they would maybe have been kind of a really small piece of a new construction project.
Well, and when we started construction, the interior design was not completed by any means. So we didn't exactly know how that fireplace was going to finish out. And there were a lot of unknowns. There were so many unknowns. But I think having the collaborative spirit helped us create this kind of magical building that looked like a pile of garbage when we started.
As the layers of the original building were peeled away, opportunities to incorporate sustainable elements began to emerge.
Sort of indirectly, I think, you know, the nature of the energy code out here, there's sustainable considerations on almost everything, even a remodel. And as we pulled apart walls, we were actively trying to insulate things and provide weather barriers and types of things that would be probably not considered in the first pass at these exterior walls. So once we knew all the skin was coming off and systems and the roofs were being redone, we were able to really bring a lot of things up to code. But in general, I think, you know, the perforated screen is sort of a passive approach to the intense amount of daylight that would be coming into those spaces on that side and those huge windows instead of just putting, you know, some blinds on there. But I think some of the materials chosen, there were considerations just on being local. And in the pandemic, it was definitely hard to source things from further away. So it kind of put a lot of those considerations back into play where it was really important to use local things because we could get them.
The construction phase also revealed unknown issues that required constant pivoting and adjustment to reach the finish line while upholding the client's vision.
So we didn't really have any as-builts. So we surveyed as well as we could, but there were some hidden gems and some unknowns, especially in terms of how the shear was working in the building. So selective demo was not good enough. And we ended up finding a lot of things as, you know, assumptions that were made were not going to work. So it kind of covered the board on what types of issues those were. But of course, when you go into a remodel, you're looking at systems and certain things that you want to try to keep, or like seeing how old everything is, or what are the door, like I think they repurposed some doors and reused them, or door frames, like little things where you can get some cost savings are kind of the first pass. And then from there, we're all like, great, well, we'll start working through the design and assume this isn't a load bearing condition, or, you know, whatever it is. And so you can see on a lot of our drawings, there's posts and random grade changes, or like some of the slab just kind of ended at one point and things were just kind of patched to work. And so now that, you know, this is going to be there forever headquarters, ideally, some of those things that probably weren't on anyone's radar are now. And so maybe that really beautiful thing you wanted to do is like moving further to the bottom of the wish list. So I think that part can always be challenging, because you want your client to get everything they want, but then everyone knows there's unknowns in a remodel, especially of a building of this age.
I recall the HVAC ducting and distribution being quite a challenge, because the second floor ceiling is not, the structure's not that high. So I don't know how much we were involved in it, but I remember we were trying to find spaces for shafts, and none of it was pinned down. I think shafts were bouncing all over the place.
The fast track nature of the project allowed for much tighter engagement for the design team. Andra shared insight on the benefits of this type of arrangement.
I think for the rest of our team that does not have experience in that, it was great to see these things. I mean, we've asked contractors to do mock-ups and kind of walk us through how something comes together, because it's lines on a page for us, right? And a lot of people in the office have never flashed a window or laid a brick. And our office is pretty dedicated to learning that stuff and really getting our hands dirty. We've been doing a lot more of that type of education just so we know what we're drawing and who's involved and the technique that's involved. And so I think seeing this building come all the way down to bones and then go all the way back up, since we were there so often, you really got to be a part of every layer, every pass of subcontractor that came through, every challenge. And like Dave said, you know, just marking stuff in chalk on the floor, on the wall. There's a bunch of versions of the drawing sets everywhere, sketches everywhere. It really felt like you were creating something instead of coming out to a site maybe once or twice at big milestones. We really got to see all the details that maybe we don't realize are as challenging as they are when we draw them.
I bet you detail differently after that as well in certain things.
Sequencing has definitely become more obvious, where, you know, we don't really think about the methods that they're using. I mean, that's part of their job, but being mindful of that type of thing when you design, I think that gives your firm a good reputation of being understanding of how the building actually goes together. And I think we are very humble in that way, and that we want the product to be successful. We want the contractor to like us, because it's important if they do. So this scenario, with it being the ownership, we really wanted them to like us. So we were really very acutely aware of how things were coming together and what the schedule was like.
Dave and Andra shed light on the most significant lessons gleaned from this specific design build and adaptive reuse endeavor.
I think for me, I learned that some of these challenges that we find can really turn into moments of delight in design, stuff we didn't know was going to happen as we were, you know, working on schematic design and almost blindly put together a design, not knowing what was around the corner. And I think that helps me realize that almost any problem we encounter, there's a solution, and it can be a beautiful solution if we just calm down and work through it with the very qualified people that we're surrounded by. We can make it work. So many projects, we're all working with our volume up to 11, And I think it really hinders what we can do when we're sort of blinded by that, that anxiety and stress. If we could just step back a little bit, we can get some pretty great things done.
I think to Dave's point, yeah, the communication piece was a big learning opportunity because, you know, in a more typical construction model, we are more pillars of how this is going to work. And in this scenario, we were all on the same team. And I think that really forced people to utilize their resources. I mean, we had all these great engineers and the construction team, super talented and diligent and dedicated. So just having that collaboration to know you don't have to know everything and you might not come up with all the answers, but you're going to come up with one of the answers and we're going to move forward and just kind of accepting some of the losses and just moving on and making the goal just to get the project complete and be proud of it. But in this particular project, we learned a lot about the land use process. We're used to having civil engineers and site work attorneys and people doing this type of stuff in advance of us coming in. So there was a lot of moving the ball forward in terms of working with the city and all these checkpoints that are required. And we had to really kind of struggle through that with basically like a timer on us. So there were definitely some takeaways from that, I think, on how grateful we are for some of these people that are experts in this and that we now can, you know, collaborate with them a bit better because we understand it better.
From unique design elements and materials to incredible spaces, there's a lot to choose from when considering a favorite aspect within the new INE construction headquarters.
I really like the break room because of what Dave was talking about before with the perforated panel. That's the west side, I think, of the building. So in the afternoons, obviously a lot of light's coming in and those shadows are really interesting and no one really cares about looking out onto the highway anyway. So it blocks a lot of that. And the way the interior designer finished out that space is really beautiful. You have two wings of offices that feed right into it. So it definitely feels like it's kind of like a hub. There's always somebody in there when we're there. So I think it's really utilized a lot, which is always great to see.
And the perforations vary in size because that's how we created the logo, was by making tighter and smaller perforations. So it's not just a repetitive pattern that casts itself onto the walls and floor. It's varied. It almost feels like a tree canopy in a way.
What's your favorite space, Dave? Same one or something different?
I think it's that break room kitchen area. It's very relaxing, especially when the light is being cast into it from the perforated panels.
In many respects, it seems that more projects are veering away from the traditional design bid build method towards alternative project delivery approaches. Dave and Andra explore the likelihood of this method becoming increasingly prevalent.
I think that depends on the sophistication of the client a lot, because I don't think it's for everyone. And I know that a lot of our clients would not thrive in this method of delivery. So it's tough to say whether it's going to become more or about the same.
I feel like in the private sector, which is usually where our clients are coming from, the financing is just so difficult right now, and they really want to know what their bottom line is going to be in order to get that loan or communicate with whoever's investing. And they really want as competitive of a price as they can get. And so even outside of just bidding for subcontracts, they're bidding for GCs just because, you know, those contingency numbers, those GC numbers can impact what direction they go in. And there's been a lot of sticker shock, I think, with construction material pricing still not coming down as much as maybe we wanted it to. We're still feeling impacts of the pandemic and just election year and all those types of things. So I'm seeing that people are getting a rough order of magnitude and panicking, and they want to know if someone else feels the same way. So they're getting kind of a second opinion. So it still feels like things are being hard bid because people need that data just for their financing.
there seems to be a trend in public work that they're using the design build delivery method. And I'm not quite sure how the nuts and bolts of it work. Do you have three design build teams throwing a number at a project and then they pull you in for a negotiation? I'm not sure, but it seems like that's happening more frequently.
Woodblock's creativity and innovation transformed INE's new workplace environment that the staff and team can now celebrate and appreciate daily. What began as a journey with a bold vision to repurpose an existing structure became a design-build success story imbued with unique character and clever design. Before we close out this episode, I always try to gain some additional insights from our guests about the greater industry. I was curious what advice Dave and Andra would give to another architect taking on a design-build project.
Throw away your preconceived notions about what the end product is going to be. It could be very different than your first lines on paper or even your DD set. It will change. And for me, the key to successful design build is to have a really good superintendent, project manager as well, but the boots on the ground, that's the key. Someone that's willing to call you when they see something that's not quite right, rather than just forging forward and creating more problems. They just get you on the phone, maybe yell at you a little bit, but then come up with a solution. And that's what I love about this, is if you have a superintendent that's looking forward rather than just building, and then, oh, I've built myself into a corner. What do I do now? It's the ability to see ahead and ask the right questions.
I really like that answer. I feel like just to be adaptable, be understanding that things are going to change and maybe turn out differently than you wanted or entirely different from designed, but it's important to just be a team player. There's no room for an ego kind of in this situation, and also to have a really good contractor.
I really enjoyed this conversation with Dave and Andra. I hope this episode sparks a new idea, helps you solve a problem that you've been working through, or inspires a mark that you want to leave on the world.
Mine, it seems to change a lot. I mean, I went into this field because I wanted to create places for people to exist. I wanted to be part of the landscape of our community, and I thought that was a pretty interesting thing to do. But since I've been doing this a little bit longer, I'm still consistently surprised at how few females there are in this space. I think it's something like 23% of licensed architects are females. So be an architect, ladies.
While 51% of architecture students are females.
Are females, right. So the conversion is just not really happening. And I don't know if that shock factor of getting into the real world and dealing with permitting is what the problem is. It might be, but I'm trying to really mentor some of the ladies here and do more outreach to get more people involved in this field, because as much as it's not always sexy, it is a really amazing career, and I'm really proud of a lot of what I've accomplished. So I really hope that we can get those numbers up.
I am all about it. I think it that women bring a completely different perspective to a male-dominated profession. And it's a good perspective. I really enjoy working with our women on staff. They're different. There's less ego. There's a lot less ego. It's about getting the job done and not trying to prove that you know more than the other guy. It's about how do we get this done? And what are we leaving with the end user? That's kind of what I want my legacy to be, is that the buildings that I've worked on, the end user gets joy from being in the space that we've worked on with them, not cramming our ideas down their throat, but really listening to the client and providing something that is theirs, not ours. We don't own it.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more, visit rcat.com/podcast to see photos, details, and more related project and product information that we discussed today. While you're there, take a look around rcat.com. For over 30 years, RCAT has been the resource for AEC professionals to find the right products for their project. Try RCAT and see how their tools can save you time and money and help you get ahead on your next project. Visit rcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can support us by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and sharing this with your friends. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back to share more stories and lessons learned to help you navigate your next project.